time. Oh my God, you got the mic open. Good evening, Truth Seekers. Mike Malloy here. Welcome to tonight's program. Thank you very much for tuning in. And for our dear friends on Ustream, we decided to turn on the camera tonight. I don't know why, just going to do it. This first hour is sponsored by Frank Beal. Frank, if I'm not pronouncing your last name right, I apologize. He has a message in support of union members everywhere. As the son of a fired Patco member, I would like to ask Patco controllers and family members to contact me if interested in having their stories told. And you can contact Frank at Patco Lives, PATCOLIVES, Patco Lives at Gmail. I think it's Beal, Frank. Anyway, thank you, Frank. Okay, I have, I wasn't going to do this, but I have got to confess, because Anthony Weiner is taking an awful lot of heat, and so to speak. And look, it was a photo that I had that have just floating around my, you know, what do you call that thing? Our photo log. And I had it in our file, and somehow it got out, and somebody put it, Anthony Weiner, it's a picture of me. And I just want to take the pressure off of Anthony Weiner. So now you know. I don't think there's anything terrible about, you know, taking a photograph of parts of your anatomy. I mean, some people, who is the member of Congress who took a picture where he's, you know, all the muscles and everything, no shirt on. So I just thought I would photograph part of my anatomy and put it out there. So, Anthony, pressure's off, dude. Tom in Maryland didn't realize that it was a photo of me when he sent me this email this evening. I think it was this evening. What the hell is the date today? Is today the first or the second? This is the first. Okay. Tom in Maryland wrote, "Hey, Mike, this whole Weiner thing of the representative being unsure if the member in the picture was his is ridiculous. To channel the spirit of Bill Hicks, quote, every man knows what his member looks like from all angles, end quote. For him to say he doesn't know if that member is his is quite ludicrous. If he were about 600 pounds overweight and hadn't seen it in 10 years, like Rush Limbaugh, I may have given him the benefit of the doubt. But Weiner is a skinny dude. He knows what his member looks like. Tom, Maryland. P.S. If member is too uncouth for radio, please use member instead." Oh, my goodness, the different words there are for that part of the male anatomy. Let me see. Just in his short email here, Tom has 1, 2, 3, and if you count member, 4. What a country. What a country. What a country. You know, You have this crazed quitter from Alaska, this psycho running around in her bus with that, you know, I mean, everybody knows she's crazy, but you know what is really crazy about it? The way television is just sucking her tailpipe. They will not let her alone. A former organizer for the KKK in Montana says he is running as a Republican, really, for Montana's representative in the U.S. House. John Abar says he believes he will fare better than people might expect because of a backlash against President Barack Obama. KKK people have a whole different definition for the word backlash. 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 He tried to run for the state legislature a couple of years ago, but lost in a Republican primary after Republicans actively worked against his candidacy. He works at a Great Falls, Montana motel. Really? He says he no longer organizes for the KKK, but he's still on its mailing list. leading state Republicans are backing Bozeman, Montana businessman Steve Daines in 2012. Party leaders believe he'll be able to win the House seat being vacated by Republican U.S. Representative Danny Rayburg, who is running for U.S. Senate. Nah, I think John Ebar ought to win. Let's get all these cockroaches out of the woodwork. Let's get Sarah Palin and Michelle Bachmann. Let's get all the cockroaches. Get them all out. You know, just go pound against the baseboard in the basement. Bang, 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 bang. And watch all the roaches come running out. Let's get them all out. Get this guy out, too. Come on, Sean. Come on, Sean Ebar. Let's see your ass win the House seat in Montana. You can do it, buddy. Don't let anybody tell you otherwise. Hey, big meeting. Big meeting today between Barack Obama and Republican cockroaches, the ones that head up the House. I like it when the Washington Post says Republican lawmakers. Lawmakers? These are cockroaches. Cockroaches. Anyway, the cockroaches and the president had a meeting hoping they could work out a plan to cut government spending in return for agreement to raise the nation's debt ceiling. And, of course, no there there. Nothing happened. According to the Washington Post, the 75-minute meeting in the East Room came a day after the House voted overwhelmingly against raising the legal limit on government borrowing. Not a single Republican lawmaker voted for the measure to raise the limit on the national debt up another $2.5 trillion. That would be a sum sufficient to cover the government's bills to the end of next year, 2012. Republican leaders said their members, there's that damn word again. Republican leaders said their members would reject any increase without a plan to sharply curtail spending and thus future borrowing. Well, if their members will reject it, then I guess they'll have to reject it too, right? Well, of course. John Boehner said after the meeting with Obama, now, of course, Representative Wiener wasn't there, but Representative John Boehner was there. Boehner was there because he's, you know, he's a Republican leader. Boehner said, quote, if we're going to raise the debt limit, what time is it? Is there a bar open around here? It must be 5 o'clock someplace. Well, if we're going to raise the debt limit, the spending cuts should exceed the increase in the debt limit. Otherwise, it will serve to cost us jobs in our country. That's not what the American people want. No, you're right, John. The American people don't want jobs to be costed. No, we don't. But, of course, if you cockroaches don't go along with what you all caused, remember, you rancid sons of bitches, you're the ones that did this. Bill Clinton handed you black budget deficits. In other words, budget surpluses as far as the eye could see, and had that filthy little twit, George W. Bush, not done what he had. If he wouldn't have given a tax cut to the wealthy, an unfunded Medicare prescription drug plan, and two wars, there would be no $14 trillion national debt, you dumbasses.
too short to listen to Right Wing Radio, here's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Oh, and before I go back to the really disgusting crap here with John Boehner and the Republican cockroaches, if you're listening online, we are playing another CD that I got from Primetime Heroes. If you like this music, just go, just look them up. You'll find them. You can go to SeventhHeaven.com, all spelled out, SeventhHeaven.com. That's their record label. But this is a good band, man. Primetime Heroes. Check them out. I like the music. I like that music. If we're going to raise the debt limit, the spending, is there a bar open around here? The spending cuts should exceed the increase of the debt limit. Otherwise, that's what Boehner said after the meeting with Obama. He also said that he told the president, this is a moment, Mr. President. This is a window of opportunity where we can deal with this on our terms. So let's not kick the can down the road one more time. Now's the time to deal with it. You know how a cliche will pop into political lingo and you just want to slice open the throat of the next person that says it? I'm getting that point with the expression, kick the can down the road. Kick the can down the road. That has to have come from one of these creepy-ass cockroaches, these Republicans.
Well, you know, I'm gonna kick the can down the road.
Representative Paul Ryan, who is one of the people responsible for the plan to destroy, further destroy the country, he's whining like these little bastards usually do. He says, you know, my plan has been misdescribed by the president and many others. It's not a voucher. Misdescribed. Is that a word, misdescribed? Misdescribed. According to a Republican official, Ryan told Obama that his criticism of the Republican budget plan, Obama's criticism, was a sign that the president was thinking about his reelection campaign. Really? Really? The fact that you're criticizing my plan, Mr. President, means you're thinking about your reelection campaign. Or asparagus. Or both? Why does somebody like Paul Ryan, who obviously is in so far over his head, to render what he says just totally incomprehensible, why does somebody like that get so much attention from the punditocracy, from television, from anybody who's sane? When do people realize? Normal people. I'm not talking about these dumbass Republicans. Come on. But when do people realize that what the Republicans have put up there is a traveling medicine freak show? All of these guys. I mean, my God, from Paul Ryan to Newt to the crazy woman from Alaska to that Bachman character. I mean, all of them. There's not 25 cents worth of sanity among the whole group. But the media, you know, in a civilized country like, oh, I don't know, a civilized country like Canada, these people would be herded together by the media. Media would offer some reason, okay, let's all get together for a photo op here, get them all together, and they would take all kinds of photos of these people, and then they would splash it in the same country, all over television, all over billboards. This is what the United States has sunk to. Christ. The Washington Post says that while the president agreed that shrinking the debt and strengthening the economy are enormously important, House Majority Leader Eric Cantor... Every time I see his name, it reminds me of my godson's bar mitzvah. I don't know why, but it just does. Eric Cantor. Anyway, he said there was a, quote, philosophical difference on whether Washington should continue to pump money into the economy or we should provide an incentive for entrepreneurs and small businesses to grow.
No, Eric, you filthy cockroach. How can you say things like that? The reason small businesses are not growing is because the banks, the people who put your worthless ass in office, are sitting on top of trillions of dollars they won't release. So you think cutting corporate taxes to 15%, I mean, nobody collects on them anyway, and gutting Social Security, ending Medicare and Medicaid, that's going to strengthen entrepreneurs and small businesses. God, you people make me sick. You just make me so sick. Every one of you Republicans, you are liars. I think all of you are, I can't say it on the air, but you all are FPs. F like Frank, P like purple. You're all FPs. You really are.
I've got a Colt 45 in here with me. I'll scare off intruders in my fatigues, black jackets, and army boots. My neck is red, my collar blue. I like it that way. I don't hear liberals talking to me. I don't.
Right now, Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. This hour is sponsored by Frank Beal. It supported union members everywhere. As the son of a fired Patco member, I'd like to ask Patco controllers and family members, contact me if interested in having their stories told. There's a website, or not a website, but a mail, email, Patco Lives, P-A-T-C-O. You remember what that was? Lives, Patco Lives at gmail.com, I'm sure. Frank Beal. I think it's Beal. Thanks, Frank. If we're going to raise the debt limit, spending cuts should exceed the increase in the debt limit. You know, Boehner, every time Boehner opens his mouth, he obviously is waiting for the next drink. I just wish he would go ahead, go back to his family bar in Ohio and just sit at the bar and become one of those philosophical types who sits at the bar.
Well, I'll tell you what's wrong with this country. You want to know what's wrong with it? I used to be the Speaker of the House. I'll tell you exactly what's wrong with this country. It's, somebody bring me another glass of Merlot down here, Jesus.
And again, you know, what is so infuriating to me about this, if George W. Bush had not given that massive tax cut to the millionaires and billionaires, and including the so-called middle class that when Bush cut everybody that tax cut, the middle class had a knife slid into its rib cage and it was twisting, slicing up all the internal organs. They just didn't know it at the time. So the middle class is practically dead now. But had Bush not done that, had Bush not invaded two countries, had Bush turned the capture of Osama bin Laden, if that's who they wanted to capture, over to the international, over to Interpol, or over to, SEAL Team 6, or wherever the hell eventually wound up with his body, we would not be facing a $14 trillion deficit. When Clinton left office, he made it very clear, regardless of what you think of Clinton, when he left office, he made it very clear that all people had to do, all the government had to do, was to stay on the program that he had set up
And again, whether you agree with that program or not, and there's a lot of it I did not agree with. I don't see national debt being anything but a joke. When you own all the printing presses where it concerns money, how in the hell can you say you're in debt? I mean, son of a bitch, this is insane. This talk about debt. Who do we?
Well, Mike, you know, the Chinese, they own all these bonds, and all the Europeans and Canadians and Mexicans, they own all these. Okay. Pay them off!
What? The print money! What are the Chinese going to say? No. We don't want your money because you're running your printing presses too much. We don't want the new money. We want the old money. Well, neither one is worth a goddamn, so what difference does it make? I mean, what difference does it make? The only thing a dollar is good for, the U.S. dollar is good for, is that it represents debt. In getting, oh, Jesus, never mind. But the thing that drives me insane is to hear these talking cockroaches standing in front of cameras talking about how, well, you know, the American people want this debt to go away. And you always hear Republicans say that. And I want to scream, you rotten son of a bitches. The American people had the debt disappearing until you people came into office and destroyed it. And you never see
the Washington Post, New York Times, LA Times, or whoever.
Do you ever see an editorial saying, wait just a goddamn minute. All this talk about $14 trillion. Oh, we're not going to raise the debt ceiling. Oh, blah, 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 blah. In the first place, it's all illusion. In the second place, the illusion was on its way to wherever illusions go when they die. At the end of Clinton's second term, it was the Republicans who did this. Man.
Well, you know, the American people want jobs in our country. We don't want all this debt. You know, I'm John Boehner, and somebody bring me a drink. What time is it? It's 3:20. Well, that means it's 5:20 in Denver. Somebody bring me a drink here. It's
Representative Jeb Hensarling, Republican from Texas, said the lawmakers at the meeting today told Obama that jobs are the top economic priority and that what he called job creators in their congressional districts have, what he said, a lack of confidence in the future. Really? Really? Lack of confidence in the future. He said employers attribute their lack of confidence to a heavy, quote, regulatory burden. Where? In Texas? Are you out of your goddamn mind? A regulatory burden in Texas? In what industry, Jeb? And a high tax burden. Who? Americans are paying a lower tax rate now than they've paid in the past 60 years, and corporations, Jeb, don't pay anything. What are you talking about? Well, what he's talking about, obviously, he's talking about how just absolutely stupid his constituents are who believe this stuff. You know, a cockroach, in order to get elected, has to have the votes of other cockroaches. I mean, normal people are not going to vote for a cockroach, would you? Regulatory burden, high tax burden. Jeb Hensarling, a Republican in Texas, went on to say that the Republicans expressed their fears to the president that, quote, the debt burden is going to lead to high taxes, end quote, hurting employment even more. They have this down, don't they? This is exactly what the little piglet Sean Hannity and the little roachettes on talk radio, that's what they all talk about, right? They get it from the Republican National Committee. It filters through the pig man, Limbaugh. Then Hannity picks it up. The least creative or original talk show host in the history of radio or television, Sean Hannity. His claim to fame was that he serviced Newt Gingrich. And you can take that any way you want. I don't care how you interpret that. He serviced him. He protected him, took care of him when Newt was under attack. Hannity would put him on the air down here in Atlanta every single day. Hannity have Newt on. He serviced Newt. So when Newt found out that Roger Ailes was opening up something called Fox Television, well, Newt had his little service boy down here who was ready for a job. Christ. Jay Carney, the press secretary, told reporters after this big meeting, why is Obama meeting with these pigs? I mean, cockroaches. Just come on. Come on, Mr. President. Free Bradley Manning. Huh? Close Guantanamo. Sign a directive, a presidential directive, ordering trillions of dollars to be spent on U.S. infrastructure and put people to work. And if you have time left over tomorrow afternoon, end the goddamn wars! Just sign something! We're finished! And send it to the puppet Hamid Karzai and this group of corporate thugs running Iraq! Come on, Mr. Obama! The hell is wrong with you? Oh, I'm going to sit down with these Republicans. How was that? How'd that go, huh? Did y'all have cucumber sandwiches? How did that go? Jesus, God. Jay Carney said, in order to achieve the reductions that the Republicans seek and pay for the extensive tax cuts for the wealthy that they insist on, they need to do two things to Medicare that aren't necessary. And it produces an unbalanced plan, puts too much of the burden of deficit reduction on the shoulders of seniors, low-income children, and the disabled. And the president just feels that that's unacceptable. Unacceptable? What movie was it when all the... Was it The Godfather, when they were all sitting around for a dinner? And was it Michael gets up with a baseball bat and walks over? Was it just one that he crushed his brains out? Was it just one that Michael swung the baseball bat? You know, Obama ought to invite these guys back for a dinner and then put on that music, you know, put on the Godfather music and have them all sit there. They got their antipasto in front of them and they got their spaghetti and the sauce and, you know, they got Boner there. Is this wine? What is this stuff? It doesn't look like wine. And then Mr. Obama could say, anybody in here play baseball? Everybody came running. Everybody said, Lord, 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 Lord. Everybody was on in. They're gonna divvy up the reward. Wah, 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 wah. There came the siren and the flashing light. But the mean individual went to the black night. Hey, 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 hey. They wonder where he is. Because he left the neighborhood like a rattlesnake shedding his skin. Well, they search the rooms, they check out the groups, and then they photograph the scene. I mean, individuals stranded in a limousine. Everybody came running.
Loud, proud, progressive talk. It's Mike Malloy.
Before the hour, okay, yeah, it wasn't The Godfather. It was The Untouchables. How many emails did I get on that one? But the idea, you know, it's a great idea, you know? It's amazing to me how quickly you can focus someone's attention if you stand behind them with a baseball bat and they're in a situation where, you know, you have all the... you have all the control over the situation. It's just, you know, and I think that should be considered at the highest levels of government, because most people have seen either or both, the Untouchables and the Godfather, and you know how this works, even though some 10-cent radio talk show hosts sometimes, or 25-cent, excuse me, get the two movies confused. But on the assumption that Boner and the rest of these guys have seen the movie, you know, the president pulls out a Louisville Slugger and starts walking around the table. I'm sure it'll get their attention, right? Early Wednesday today, Boner released a letter signed by 150 economists. And they all work for the Heritage Foundation, I'm sure. 150 economists supporting Boner's call for spending cuts equal to the amount that the debt ceiling is eventually raised. So we have to find $2.4 trillion in spending cuts. Well, let's eliminate the War Department. There's $1 trillion. What else can we eliminate? Boner's beer budget or wine budget. There's another huge amount of money. 150 economists, huh? I'll bet. I'll bet one of them was Andrew Breitbart. Polls show that a higher debt limit is extremely unpopular with a large majority of voters, which has left Democrats leery of calling for an increase in the debt limit. Now, why would this large majority of voters be leery, or why would it be highly unpopular to have a higher debt limit? The average voter doesn't have a clue as to what any of this stuff means. What they have is what's been fed to them by the teabag cockroaches and the Limbaugh cockroach and the Hannity cockroach and the rest of these scum. That's what they know about the debt limit. They have no idea what any of this stuff means. And like I said, it doesn't mean anything. It means nothing. It means zero. You want more money? Here, let's print some more money. Go ahead, print some more money. Yeah, how much you want? You want a trillion? Okay. And before everybody starts writing to me about, well, Mike, the Federal Reserve, blah, 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 blah. Let's not get confused here as to how the Federal Reserve gets its marching orders. I mean, if the Federal Reserve said tomorrow, well, we think we're going to print $50 trillion worth of money on their own, I don't think it would fly. You know what I'm saying? The government owns the money printing presses. But, Mike, Federal Reserve is a, you know, it's not a, you know, it's not what... Okay. But who tells the Federal Reserve to print more money? And actually, they don't print it. The Bureau of Printing and... Never mind. On Tuesday, yesterday, as the House voted 318-97 against raising the limit, the debt limit, that was a comedy vote. That was a comedy act. Everybody knows that. It was for political ads coming up in the next election cycle. Everybody knows that. Wall Street knows that. The bond sales reps, U.S. bonds, they know that. Everybody knows it was a joke. Eric Cantor, there it goes again, reminds me of the Godfather's bar mitzvah. What is? Eric Cantor said in a statement, quote, "Tonight's vote illustrates that there is no support in the people's house, the people's house, for a debt limit increase without real spending cuts and binding budget process reforms. The families and business owners throughout the country want Washington to begin to live within its means and stop maxing out the credit card." Live within its means, Eric?
Well, you could help that. You could help that along. Get your ass into work tomorrow and start organizing your filthy cockroach caucus to eliminate the War Department. There's $1 trillion. You've just got half of your increase right there. Just eliminate it. Is somebody going to take advantage of us? Give me a goddamn break, Eric. We have 9,000 nuclear warheads, and we don't care about civilian deaths. Bush didn't. Obama doesn't. Nobody does. Nuke them. If they get out of line, Eric, nuke them. So there's your trillion.
The American people. There's no support in the people's house. He actually said that. There's no support in the people's house.
Eric, that cesspool where you cockroaches do your dirty work has not been the people's house for three generations.
We'll be back.
From Primetime Heroes, a band out of the state of Washington. And the vocalist on that, the vocalist is Leanne Christopherson. I mean, that is one singing woman. Great band, Primetime Heroes. Check them out. Primetime Heroes. I love this music. And Leanne Christopherson, who just rips the ceiling off. This hour is sponsored by Jim Taleb. Thank you, Jim. Madeline has an idea about cutting the country's indebtedness. She writes, Mike, first I think Congress should cut their pay and the pay of the Supreme Court justices by half. Then it should eliminate all pensions and health care for Congress and the Supreme Court. Next, Obama needs to reduce the federal payrolls by laying off all the Bush appointees. Cut the defense budget by 50%, do away with all no-bid contracts, prosecute, fine, and jail all contractors known to have committed fraud with the funds awarded to them. Now, it's only a start, but a start I'm sure the people will approve of. Yeah, that's a good start. That's a good start. What else we got? Oh, this. Oh, Jesus. You know, here goes the president again. The Obama administration now is running away from a plan to make millions of acres of undeveloped land in the West eligible for federal wilderness protection. Interior Secretary Ken Salazar said in a memo today to his agency that officials in the Interior Department will not designate any public lands as, quote, wild lands, end quote. See, if they designate wild lands, then the mining interests
interests, the natural gas interests, the timber interests can't go there and destroy and break and pollute and ruin, poison the groundwater, poison the atmosphere, destroy old growth forests. You know, that's why you call them wild lands. You're trying to protect them if you're a responsible government agency like the Interior Department. And the reason you have to do that is because corporations, capitalism, doesn't give a goddamn about forests, pristine lakes and brooks and streams and rivers and groundwater. Give me a break. It's just one more thing for capitalism to devour and then to leave behind after they're finished eating, to leave behind a mess for somebody else to clean up. Capitalism never, ever cleans up its own mess. Give me an example of when it does. Just send me an email. One example of where capitalism on its own cleaned up the huge, nasty, polluting, environmentally destructive mess that it leaves after it has fracked the ground and chopped down the trees and blown the top off of mountains in West Virginia. Jesus God. So the Interior Department is there to regulate how much destruction and death and environmental disaster capitalist America can perpetrate against the common ground, the common trees, you know, something that we're all supposed to have. It's supposed to be public lands. That's you. That's me. Sure it is. That was the original idea. But it doesn't belong to us anymore. It belongs to capitalist America. It belongs to corporatist America. They're the ones that own it. And by God, they want these dumb ass regulations removed. Now, remember the little punk Texas legislator or the legislator from Texas. What's his name? I forget his name. Doesn't matter. I just quoted him. He said, there are too many business regulations. We can't make any money down here in Texas. You can't make any money in Texas, you half-wit, because God is punishing the hell out of you people with all these fires. That's why you can't make any money. Yeah, let me tell you something, Mr. Representative from Texas. Maybe you didn't know this. God hates you. He hates you. He hates your whole state. That's why he's burning it up. Are you kidding me? No, you don't believe that? Well, that's what the fundamentalist preachers say when there's some disaster someplace in the east or the northeast or the west coast. They always say God is just pissed off. So, Texas, you're in hell. But I digress. Ken Salazar says that the Interior Department will, get this, will work with members of Congress to develop recommendations for managing millions of acres of undeveloped land in the West. Do you know how you manage those acres? You leave it the hell alone. That's how you manage it. You leave it alone. You leave it alone. But Salazar, lying through his teeth again, says the Interior Department will work with members of Congress. Members of Congress, no. Members of Congress are just appendages of capitalist slash corporatist America. They are, you know, members of Congress are the same kind of member as referred to in the Wiener tweet. They're members. Of course they're members. And they get treated like members. This memo came after a budget deal approved by Congress prevented the Interior Department from spending money to implement the wilderness policy. Yeah, Congress controls the purse strings. They don't like something. You want to end the wars? You can do it two ways, with an executive order from the commander-in-chief, or Congress can stop funding them. But I digress again. Salazar's decision reverses an order issued in December to make millions of acres of public land eligible for wilderness protection. Now, that plan replaced a policy put into effect during the reign of the Bush crime family, dubbed by critics as No More Wilderness, that opened western lands to commercial development. That was another legacy from the Bush crime family.
mountains, trees, rivers, streams, lakes. And what? People want us to stop capitalist America from going in there and ripping the hell out of everything? Well, that doesn't make any sense. We're all about profit. We're all about cutting down trees and blowing the tops off of mountains and fracking the ground and destroying the groundwater. What's this wilderness crapola? Well, Ken Salazar, who works directly for Barack Obama, since he is the Interior Secretary, Barack Obama has the right to fire him. And if Ken Salazar does something and it meets no resistance from the president, then it goes without saying that the president approves what Ken Salazar just did. Okay, so let's make sure we got that straight. Senator Orrin Hatch, the religious fanatic from Utah, hailed Salazar's reversal of what he called a misguided policy. It's a misguided policy out here in Utah. We don't want trees. God damn it. We are a desert state. We don't want Great Salt Lake. Go fishing in there. Who needs lakes? Who needs water? We need business, preferably owned by Mormons. So Salazar, Orrin Hatch, called it a misguided policy to make millions of acres of public land. That's land owned by you and me. Don't laugh. Off limits to the corporate bastards. That's a misguided policy, according to the religious cult member, Orrin Hatch. Wow.
Gather round the campfire. It's more Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. This hour is sponsored by Jim Taleb. Jim Taleb. Thank you, Jim. So, the Obama administration is, once again, cutting and running in the face of Republican bully boys from a plan to make millions of acres of undeveloped land in the West eligible for federal wilderness protection. No, 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 no. Those are not your mountains. Those are not your trees. Those are not your lakes and rivers and streams and fish and birds and flowers and prairies. No, no, no. They belong to capitalism, and capitalism, by God, will do as it will. You like to hunt and fish? Go to a hunting and fishing show. They have those little ponds where you can throw a line in for a buck and hook a nice big fat trout, right? You want to hunt? Go to Canada. Canada has just thousands of square miles where you can shoot things. William Meadows, the president of the Wilderness Society, said he was deeply disappointed at the decision, which he said ignores the Bureau of Land Management's obligation to protect wilderness values.
Protect wilderness.
Oh, my God, that is so 19th century. Protect wilderness values? Why? There's nothing there to protect. People don't go out there. You want to see animals? Go to the goddamn zoo. Lord have mercy. So Obama tells his interior secretary, okay, back down. So Salazar backs down.
William Meadows, president of the Wilderness Society, said, quote, without strong and decisive action from the Department of the Interior, wilderness will not be given the protection it is due, putting millions of acres of public lands at risk, end quote. Oh, stop. Who gives a damn? Putting millions of acres at risk of what? There's natural resources out there. There's minerals. There's oil. There's gas. There's timber. Come on. At a congressional hearing last March, House Republicans and two Republican governors accused the Obama administration of a land grab by creating the, quote, wildland, end quote, designations on federal tracts that could also hold lots of oil, gas, minerals. Like in Afghanistan. A land grab. The President of the United States did a land grab. The Republicans said the policy would circumvent Congress's authority. And could be used, you know, if he gets away with this, he could declare a vast swath of public lands off limits to oil and gas drilling. Oh, Jesus Christ, no, not ever. Oh, calm down. That will never, ever happen. Representative Denny Redberg, a Republican of Montana, said the policy threatens the economy in rural western states. And he accused the Obama administration of waging a war on the West. Oh, you filthy Barack Obama, waging a war on the West. Back down, back down. Well, he already has. Idaho Governor Butch Otter. Butch Otter called the plan, quote, a drastic change in public policy for public lands that was done without public input. A lot of P's in there. My name is Butch Otter. Public policy, public lands done without public input. He called on Congress to, quote, take back, got any more P's? Take back its authority and block the new policy. Designation as wild land would only be made after public comments and review. So Butch Otter is another Republican lying cockroach. So land grab, this done without public input. No, Butch. No. But it doesn't matter. You don't care for the truth. None of you Republican filth cares for the truth. The truth means nothing to you. And you know that Barack Obama is terrified of you. So just say he's waging war on the West and say that he's interfering with economic development and tell him to tell his boy Ken to back off. And bada bing, bada boom. It's done. I wanna make more money than I can spend. I wanna build more bombs than I can send. Somewhere I can even spell the name of. Welcome to the new American century. Yeah, welcome to the new American century. I want a big, big Mac and double fries. I want to wave my American standards high. I want to fly my flag across your sky.
He watches C-SPAN so you don't have to. It's more Mike Malone. Don't you dare to try and
stop us. 25 before the hour. You email from Tim in L.A. here. Tim from L.A. He writes, Mike, I watched television today and did not hear about Ken Salazar's wilderness designation anywhere, but they did talk about Anthony Weiner. I wonder if Weiner was a distraction for the Democratic Party so Obama and his buddies could profit off of ripping off our wilderness and pass it along to his buddies, especially Jeffrey Immelt, the murderer and CEO of General Electric. If true, then our party is destroyed. Tim from L.A., our party has long been destroyed, my friend. Long been destroyed. No no offense, but there is no Democratic Party anymore. Not in the sense that there used to be a Democratic, but there used to be a Republican Party, too. But they're both gone. They're both destroyed. There is still this corpse, this shell, this zombie that calls itself the Democratic Party. And there's another one in the shape of a cockroach that calls itself the Republican Party. But these are corpses. These are walking dead. This hour is sponsored by Jim Taleb. I think it's time. I have a real surprise for you. I didn't even mention it. How about one of our infrequent, almost non-existent moment with Bob. Ah! Doesn't that music remind you of happier times on the Molloy program? Ah. Another moment with Bob brought to you by your friends at Offshore Drilling. The title of tonight's Moment with Bob is Weasels Ripped My Flesh. Hey, Mike. Half a lifetime ago, about 44 million Americans elected Ronald Reagan to be the president of the United States. The morning after the election, I went to work. I was working for the phone company at the time. My so-called career in the movie business had crashed and burned. My wife was pregnant, and I needed a job, any job. Danny, a musician friend of mine, had gotten a job at the phone company. When his meteoric rise to fame and glory fizzled out, and he told me to put in an application, he said they'd hire anybody. I couldn't argue with that. After all, they gave Danny a job. He was the most unemployable person I knew. I put in an application. They hired and trained me that day. And the next morning, I was working for the phone company. We were paid every 2 weeks. Payday was normally on Friday, but if you promised not to cash your check, they'd give it to you on Thursday. And every Thursday, Danny and I would take our paychecks to our favorite liquor store. James, the night manager, was cool. He'd cash our checks for a slight fee. We'd buy a bottle of Wild Turkey, head on over to the House of Records in Santa Monica, buy a couple of albums, rock and classical usually, and drive up to my house because I had a killer sound system. Not just a good system, a fantastic one. In 2011 dollars, the cost of the amp, huge speakers, and turntable would be just shy of, $5,000. Only an idiot would spend that kind of money just to play records. And in 1980, as a soon-to-be Hollywood has-been, I fit that description perfectly. My wife was a nurse and worked nights. Danny and I would go into the music room, turn on the system, put the latest vinyl on the turntable, crack open the bottle, and blast ourselves to a place where we believed the lies we told ourselves. Every other Thursday was record and booze night at Bob's Macambo Lounge. And every other Friday, my hangover and I would go back to the phone company. Before I worked there, I had no idea what went on inside the huge featureless building in West L.A. You picked up your phone and made a call. How that happened was a mystery. After my second day, I realized it was a miracle. Everyone in the building had a mindless job. Every part of any task was broken down into its simplest components. And then they'd hire people. Each person would be assigned to do one simple thing. The supervisor would take the results of his department's simple things to his supervisor. And then all the supervisor would combine all the accumulated simple things, and that would result in something being done. Most often, a dial tone. For 15 minutes in the morning, 45 minutes at midday, and 15 minutes
in the afternoon, we would leave our windowless concrete room and walk down the windowless concrete hall to another windowless concrete room where we would be free. We drank terrible coffee, ate tasteless sandwiches, and bitched about our job until our free time was up and we returned to our desks. During my tenure at the phone company, if you needed to leave your desk and be out of your windowless concrete room, you needed a hall pass. Black clothing was not allowed. Management was seemingly deranged by a perceived threat from the punk goth movement, so they outlawed the color black. Hats of any kind were against the rules, too. I was told by my coworkers, management was always instituting new rules. For the most part, nobody did anything about the rules except follow them and bitch about them. Every once in a great while, somebody would snap at the latest batch of silly rules and quit. Well, no pension for them. The goal of my coworkers was to put up with whatever management dished out for 20 years. The pension for a 20-year man was supposed to be very good. The goal of management was to constantly sift through the employees and weed out anyone who wasn't compliant. They rarely had to fire anybody. Anyone who eventually couldn't put up with all the idiotic rules and regulations would voluntarily quit. I called management's process clamp and release. They'd issue three new ridiculous rules like hall pass, no black clothing, and no hats. Everybody would grumble and grumble about the new rules. Maybe the gutless, powerless union guy might say something to a supervisor. If the grumbling was loud enough and the workers pressured the union rep to talk to management a second time, there was a good chance that the gutless, powerless union guy would come back with a victory for the workers. One of the three stupid rules would be rescinded. Yay! We can wear hats! And then the management cha-cha would start all over again. Two steps forward, one step back. Two steps forward, one step back. Clamp and release, clamp and release. Somebody in management knew a thing or two about instilling learned helplessness in their workforce. The day after the 1980 presidential election, I didn't go to work with a hangover, but something much worse. Crushing depression. The woman in the desk next to mine came in late. It was okay, though. She was having an affair with our immediate supervisor. She asked me what I thought about the election. Before I could tell her that I thought it was one of the worst things that had ever happened, she bubbled up and said it was so cool, Ronald Reagan was president! Earlier that morning, my next-door neighbor was out watering his hedge. He said he was freaking jazzed because Reagan's election meant that his aerospace company would finally get the go-ahead for the B-1 bomber, and he could keep his job. Everybody I came in contact with that Wednesday was absolutely elated about Ronald Reagan and the Republicans who were now in charge. While I was walking around in stunned disbelief, everybody else was acting as if finding out they had terminal cancer was the best news they'd received in their whole lives. Danny and I moved up Record and Booze Night at Bob's Mogambo Lounge from the next Thursday to that night. I got fired for insubordination for wearing black jeans after being repeatedly warned. I think my firing had more to do with my not-so-surreptitiously left business cards on every supervisor's desk. I had them specially printed up to read, "You are cordially invited to eat blank and die." And Danny, a mutual friend of ours, told me that he ran into him years ago while taking photographs on a deserted beach. Danny wandered up to him and said, "Don't you remember your old friend?" Danny took him to his van hidden in the bush. He was living there. "I'm between gigs, man." My friend said he seemed particularly proud of the fact that he owned a gun. I read the news today. Oh, boy. They just don't quit. The Republicans just don't ever quit. Two steps forward, one step back. Two steps forward, one step back. Every freaking day. So here we all are, still orbiting the sun at 67,000 miles an hour. It seems to me that management's 30-year-long clamp-and-release program has worked out pretty well for them. We're finally, ultimately, compliant. I can't speak for Danny, though. A homeless alcoholic living in a van on a deserted beach with a gun might have decided to quit. Regards,
Moment with Bob. Rare and infrequent as they are, brought to you by your friends at Offshore Drilling. Moment with Bob is sponsored by... Moment with Bob is sponsored by... Let me think about this. I'll let you know.
Dying, come on. If you're tired of the fighting, come on. No more wars, no more lying, come on. All my people in the world, come on. Every boy, every girl, come on. If you know it ain't over till God says that it's over, come on. Come on, let's go.
Someday,
yes, we'll put it together when we get it all.
Conservatives, don't be afraid. Be very afraid. It's Michael Moore.
Ten before the hour. This hour is sponsored by Jim Taylor. Thank you, Jim. We appreciate it very much here at the Molloy Program. You know how the... the really crazy, I mean, so far out there that, you know, out of their crawl space that the string has broken. I mean, these people I'm about to reference are just totally insane. Honest to God, they're the ones who work in their state legislators to pass laws prohibiting their state from adopting Sharia law. You know, Islamic fundamentalist law. Now, they would have no problem with Christian fundamentalist law. You know, if your son or daughter is a smart ass to you, just take them out in the backyard and cut their heads off. But, no, you don't think so? Read Deuteronomy. Read Numbers. Read Leviticus. Oh, boy. So there's several, I guess several is the correct vague reference. Several state legislatures that have passed bills that say this state will never have Sharia law. Oh, God damn it. And I guess that made them all feel good. You know, now they have protected themselves against the onslaught of Muslims that are just attacking and attacking and attacking. They never stop. Every time you pick up the paper, another church has been burned down in the United States. Another synagogue has been attacked by Muslims. Another public school has been blown to pieces by Muslim terrorists, right? Every single day it happens in this country. They fly drone aircraft over our rural areas in order to kill leaders of the Christian faith. And oops, they also kill a handful of kids or goat herders or used car dealers, and you know, and then they always apologize. American state legislatures have passed laws ensuring that Sharia will never be the legal code that operates inside their states. If that is an example of total blown out, freaked out, goddamn insanity, what would qualify? What? I mean, this is madness. But this is United States, an armed madhouse. The only way Sharia law would occur here, of course, would be if all of a sudden all 1 billion Muslims attacked the United States.
and defeated all the God-fearing Christians and Jews and atheists and Wiccans and Mormons and Scientologists, defeated them all and instituted Sharia law over the whole country. Now, how effective would the state legislature be that had passed a law saying, no Sharia law? I don't think it would work, boys, girls. Well, guess what? Critics, this is from Penny Hill Press, critics have questioned the constitutionality of these recently proposed or enacted measures under the religion clauses of the First Amendment U.S. Constitution. The Establishment Clause prohibits the government from establishing an official religion or showing preference among religions or between religion and non-religion. Uh-oh, that dirty, filthy, rotten First Amendment. There it is again. Rand Paul has something to say about that, too. I'll get to after the break at the top of the hour. But here it is. The Free Exercise Clause prohibits the government from burdening an individual's ability to exercise his or her religious beliefs if the burden does not arise from neutral law or general applicability, but instead infringes upon a particular set of beliefs. Do you follow that? Any bill that would specifically ban Sharia must be challenged as a disapproval of Islam in violation of the Establishment Clause, or as an infringement on the ability of Muslims to freely exercise their beliefs under the Free Exercise Clause. So I wonder what will happen now. Is it Arizona, Oklahoma, one of the more crazed states, or is it here in Georgia? If we don't have it here in Georgia, I'm sure we soon will. God forbid, or Allah, or Yahweh, or somebody forbid that the state of Georgia's Muslims would try to impose Sharia law. But you never know about these sneaky devils. They come riding into town at night on their camels. Ah! And force everybody to... No, they don't. They don't do that. They don't ride camels. Oh. But I wonder what's going to happen when these state legislatures discover... They probably never will, that their little exercise in religious suppression. Now, don't get me wrong. I think all religions should be banned from planet Earth. Okay. You know that. When they find out that their little attempt, their little squeaky, moronic cockroach attempt to say, my religion is better than your religion, and you are not going to make us, you won't. To find out that they have just violated the First Amendment. You know what the reaction will be? First Amendment? That's not what the First Amendment says. First Amendment says, this is a Christian nation. We'll be back momentarily.
this hour is sponsored by Joe Bacon. Thank you, Joe. Thank you very much. The phone lines here are open. We will take some calls if you are so inclined. The phone number is 877-996-2556. 877-996-2556. I think I've just discovered something here from Prairie 2. I have. I mean, what a night this has been. A moment with Bob and now a moment with Prairie numeral 2. This is entitled Dying for Reaganomics. Uh-oh. Police and firefighters in Alameda, California stood by and watched an elderly man commit suicide in neck-deep water. It took an hour. Yeah, I saw this on the news tonight. Oh, my God. When questioned by reporters, the fire chief responded that when on duty, it would make no difference to him if it were a child in the water. You see, they are constrained by city policy. In other words, in these times, not one of them will risk his job to save a life against policy. It's come to this. Following orders is survival. And the orders are getting more heartless as we sink into the depths of fascism. The city of Alameda has no water rescue equipment or trained personnel, despite being located on an island. The Coast Guard responded but could not operate their boat in the shallow water. The body was recovered by a passerby who got past the police on the beach. On Wall Street, the further decline of the economy caused the Dow to drop almost 300 points. It wasn't blamed on the game of chicken the Republicans in Congress are playing with the debt limit. Senior Republicans continue to reassure their masters on Lower Manhattan that in Lower Manhattan that they are just kidding about ending the United States by defaulting on the debt. It's a bit over 90 days. In a bit over 90 days, Republicans will be forced to accept the reality they've created. Or grandma's Social Security check will bounce. The 14th Amendment requires the United States to make good on its debts and requires that no public official shall even suggest otherwise. But the 2nd or 10th Amendment are the only ones that Republicans think were ever ratified. The rest don't count. As far as the debt goes, the thing you must remember is that an economy is a closed system. The government has no problem borrowing this much money because the money is out there. The rich aren't taxed enough and they can't spend it all. They don't know what to do with their money. Just putting it into the market would create massive inflation, and that doesn't really work for them. They do live like feudal lords and they do buy up middle class wealth, but that doesn't get rid of enough of their cash, so they must buy treasury bonds. Lots and lots of them. Of course, this isn't a workable system in the long term, but they have their own private beaches with their own private lifeguards behind fences and gates with private guards. So what's the problem? PrairieNumeral2.com. Hi. Rand Paul. Jason Lincoln's at Huffington Post writes, Senator Rand Paul is usually described as a doctrinaire libertarian. For example, Paul is of the opinion that the Americans with Disabilities Act is an egregious infringement on liberty when the common sense solution is obviously just to herd wheelchair-bound workers to the first floor of every office building. That's simple. That's what Rand Paul believes, and he usually sticks to it. But Paul now believes that certain people should be jailed for merely exercising their right to assemble under the Constitution of the United States. His sudden shift on civil liberties all went down on Sean Hannity's little radio show last Friday. Ron Paul. I'm not for profiling people on the color of their skin or on their religion, but I would take into account where they've been traveling and perhaps you might have to indirectly take into account whether or not they've been going to radical political speeches by religious leaders. It wouldn't be that they are Islamic, but if someone is attending speeches from someone who is promoting the violent overthrow of our government, that's really an offense, and that we should be going after. They should be deported or put in prison. Deporting people? Putting them in prison for listening to speeches? WTF? His suggestion that people be imprisoned or deported for merely attending a political speech would be a fairly egregious violation of the First Amendment, not to mention due process. What if somebody attended a radical speech as a curious bystander? Hey, Harriet, what's going on over there? I don't know. It looks like a radical speech. Well, let's go find out. Would they be thrown in prison, too? And, of course, who defines what is considered so radical that it's worth imprisonment? Oh, my God. Rand Paul, the libertarian. What do the courts say about the matter? Glenn Greenwald, writing at Salon, says, quote, indeed, the First Amendment not only protects the mere attending of a speech promoting the violent overthrow of our government, but also the giving of such a speech. You can actually do that. Did you know that? The government is absolutely barred by the free speech clause from punishing people even for advocating violence. That has been true since the Supreme Court's unanimous 1967 decision in Brandenburg versus Ohio, which overturned the criminal conviction of a KKK leader who had threatened violence against political officials in a speech. At any rate, there is already a criminal statute that penalizes the agreement of a group to commit a criminal act. It's called conspiracy. It mainly focuses on persons who are actively and overtly participating in plans to commit a crime. I'm guessing that one good way to evaluate whether or not a radical group is going to escalate from merely talking about overthrowing the government to actually pursuing such a plan is to let people freely attend that group's speeches without fear that they'll be clapped in irons. Rand Paul. I'm not profiling people on the color of their skin or on their religion, he said, but I would take into account where they've been traveling. And perhaps you have to take into account whether or not they've been going to radical political speeches. If someone attending speeches from someone who is promoting the violent overthrow of our government, that's really an offense that we should be going after. They should be deported or put in prison for attending a speech. Rand Paul, another cockroach, another filthy, stupid, moronic cockroach who tries to say he's a libertarian.
Talking about the revolution.
Welcome back. You want to say something? Go ahead.
Because liberal is a good word. It's more Mike Malloy.
Oh, yeah, it is. 21 past the hour. This hour is sponsored by Joe Bacon. Thanks, Joe. From Jamie in Maryland about Rand Paul getting all crazy about First Amendment and radical speech and people who attend speeches that are radical in their nature should be deported or jailed. What about Rick Perry, the governor of Texas? Jamie writes, Mike, consistent with Rand Paul's latest rant, the Republican governor of Texas, Rick Perry, should be jailed immediately for stating in public that he has considered seceding from the United States. I believe promoting such an action, particularly by an elected official, is already a crime, but all those teabag followers of Perry and Paul would no doubt be surprised to find themselves locked up for listening to a fellow teabagger. I'm just saying. Jamie in Maryland. Oh, my God. And from Jeanette, I attended a meeting tonight of a group of people with various disabilities who would be happy to give Rand Paul a collective gesture via whatever body parts they can move. As to being arrested for listening to speeches, I don't even know what to say to that. I'm wearing my WikiLeaks t-shirt, which arrived in the mail today. A picture of Julian Assange with a U.S. flag covering his mouth and the caption, "The truth is not treason." Both Ron and Rand Paul can kiss my liberal, gay, non-white, loving, disabled ass. Woo! Ow! From Jeanette. Yeah, in reference to Rand Paul saying the Americans with Disabilities Act is should be rescinded and, you know, just make the people who are mobile some way other than their lower limbs, make them all work on the first floor. Right? Why, sure. All right, 877-996-2556 is the number here. Mark is in San Francisco listening on Green 960. Hello.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
I'm all right. How about you?
I'm doing all right.
Good.
Basically, I want to talk to you about these Republican traitor terrorists that are threatening to, you know, not raise the debt ceiling if they don't get more money from the middle class and transferred over to the rich.
Right.
And
don't they sound like a bunch of little spoiled whiners? Wouldn't you like to just take their pants down and smack their asses? I mean, seriously.
It'd be a good start.
Yeah, it would be a good start, yeah.
You know what's worse is the people that vote for these traitors. After 8 years of Bush, they didn't get enough of it.
Yeah.
They went back for more, and now we got all these cockroaches and more of them coming out of the woodwork like we've never seen.
I know.
Because of these people that voted them in again. It's just disgusting. And they call your, you know, they leave emails for you, and they say things to you about, you know, how they dislike the way you talk. But you know what, Mike? They just don't want to face the truth that they're destroying the country, and they have destroyed the country by putting these idiots in office.
That's so true. I really believe that.
You know, and it's just great that we have voices like you, you know, to say the truth, because some people just don't want to face the truth that the Republican Party are traitors to this country. They just don't want to deal with reality. They're in denial. But, you know, that's the facts. This Republican Party's destroying the country, and all they've been doing, Mike, for the last 30 years is stealing money from the middle class to the rich, and the path to prosperity is definitely, if you can't see what they're doing there, then God help us all. That's the biggest ripoff in the history of this country. They want to give more tax breaks to the rich and then decimate all our programs to pay for it. It's just disgusting.
Isn't it? I mean, how much more of this do you think, Mark, people will put up with before there is open rebellion in this country?
You know, Mike, I've been giving that some thought, and I think the problem is people, they haven't or they don't really realize what this Republican Party wants to do to them. Now, you see at the town hall meetings how these people are screaming at them. But if they try to bully their way to get what they want and they shove this down people's throats, it's going to get real ugly. I think they're underestimating the type of resentment and the type of pushback they're going to get from the people of this country if they think they're going to cram this stuff down our throats and there's not going to be any repercussions. I think they're deeply mistaken.
I think you're right. I'm just wondering what the repercussions are going to be. Mark, thanks. Got to move on. I appreciate your call, okay?
Okay, brother.
All right, man. Take care. 877-996-2556. Jump in here and join us. We'll be right back.
Too short to listen to right-wing radio. Here's Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. And again, if you're listening online, I hope you're enjoying this music. Primetime Heroes. Yow. We produced by David Karen. It's on Seventh Heaven, I believe, is the label. Seventh Heaven Records. And we get a considerable amount of music, you know, from folks who listen to the program and want to share some of their creativity. And I'm always grateful when that happens, when someone thinks enough of this program to send their music in. This particular group, Primetime Heroes, they sent me two CDs. And it's hard to stop. It's hard to put them down. Primetime Heroes, check them out. Seriously, check them out. You got to check them out. You're listening online. You hear them. The vocalist there, Leon Christofferson. Yow. I mean, and the musicians, too. The players are all good. This is a very, very tight well-produced band. God, they're good. I just like this band. Thanks to the person who sent me this music. Primetime Heroes. Find them. Primetime Heroes. Just find them. You'll find them. Phone calls. Okay. Tom is in Bullhead City, Arizona. Hello, Tom.
Yeah, hey. You were talking the San Francisco incident with the fire department watching this guy drown as he committed suicide?
Yeah, not San Francisco. It was
Alameda.
Alameda, right.
Same thing. Close.
Is Alameda near San Francisco?
No.
Oh, I didn't know.
Stay real close. Anyway, I was in the Navy at the time in 1986. And it kind of, it's not the whole key issue, but I'm sure your listeners will relate to this, is they were, some of us old, like in their 50s, remember back there in 1986 when Reagan started cutting out the homeless shelters and stuff like that in San Francisco, in that area. At the same time, they were touting how humanitarian our government was, that we went and rescued two whales up in Puget Sound or something.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that?
It was
in Antarctica.
I've seen a lot
of... It was the Russians, and the Coast Guard, and the Russians, and it says, oh, you know, how wonderful, you know, that we're so humanitarian and we're saving these two whales.
Right.
And the Russians and the Americans got together and saved these two whales. And meanwhile, they're cutting out all these homeless shelters in San Francisco and California and, you know. And I just thought, you know, and I think about that attitude. And it, to me, it just kind of relates. I don't know, maybe I'm crazy, but it, to me, somehow, you know, I'm going to land a helicopter down and say it all fits there. It all fits into the same mindset, you know. And I'd like to say hello to or shout out to Ed in Fairbanks who said, you know, my name when he sent your, you know, podcast or, you know, donations for your hour.
No, that was Stephen in Burbank, California.
Yeah. Stephen Burbank.
And I don't think Alameda is anywhere near San Francisco.
No, you know what? You know, 50-50 here. I get half of them right, Mike. Half the time I'm right.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. Yeah, I got it. I hear you, Tom.
Okay, thanks.
No, I got you. I got you, man. Thank you. Appreciate it. Thanks, Tom. Let me see here. California. Oh, yeah, it's over there. I love Tom in Bullhead City. He's great. Thanks, Tom. Nora is in Minneapolis listening on KTNF. Hello, Nora.
Hey, Mike. WTF, can I say that? That dude that was on. Anyway, that music was great.
There's no laws against using letters of the alphabet, at least not yet.
I know.
Yeah.
Material support for terrorism, though, if you say that you support the wrong idea.
Rand Paul, the great libertarian, you're not supposed to listen to bad stuff, you know.
So I called to check in about what's going on up here in Minnesota.
Yeah, well, I don't know.
They're sending out the notices to shut down the state.
To shut down what now? Start over.
They're sending out notices to state employees.
All right, now who is?
Our Minnesota, the governor will not agree to the cuts. You know, when the tornado came, we were over at the Capitol protesting the cuts, and the governor would not agree to the cuts. So now there's no budget, and the state's supposed to shut down July 1st or something like that. They're sending out notices that 35,000 in the next week, and this week, a bunch of other people are getting notices. It's not going to help the economy much, is it?
Well, I didn't know. I mean, what tornado went through Minneapolis or Minnesota?
Oh, you know, it must have been so small because it happened on the same day as that Joplin one, and only two people got killed.
Oh.
North Minneapolis, the place they call North Minneapolis,
uh-huh.
Where if any people did escape out of Katrina and came to Minneapolis, that's where they probably ended up, is in North Minneapolis. It's a section that's, you know, sort of segregated. It's ended up that way for a long time,
uh-huh.
But that's where the tornado hit. And when I got to think about it, that probably is the most Christian part of the cities. The last time the tornado hit was when they were arguing at that church about gay clergy, and the tornado came and knocked the steeple off the church. That was over here about 2 years ago, 3 years ago.
Wow.
We have crazy tornado situations.
I was not aware, Nora, that Minneapolis got whacked with tornadoes. Hey, listen, anything else?
Well, yeah. Did you hear about when Eric Holder was here last week and we were battling and we were so loud and he got interrupted 7 times and then he gave up on his speech but it was for this great cause where they're doing ending youth violence in Minneapolis? That was in the morning.
No, I missed that.
When it got to the afternoon, the U.S. attorney was actually coming up to Colleen Rowley and all of these, you know, the group that where they are refusing to go to the grand jury. We were all there protesting, and
uh-huh.
And look it up. It went all over the news, and check it out. It was really interesting because the U.S. attorney of Minneapolis came up to Colleen Rowley to mm-hmm. beg that we wouldn't be interrupting their little afternoon event with their little Somalian community. He called it our Somalian community. I don't know who he meant when he said our, but they're really trying to, you know, have this positive youth of Somalian, because we have the biggest Somalian community here. It took over on the West Bank where it used to be the hippies and the, you know, punk. Before that, it was Bob Dylan, you know,
uh-huh.
where he used to halfway. But now it's little Mogadishu, I call it. They got to come to a peaceful area, at least.
That's true. All right, well, Nora, it sounds like you just have way too much fun, just way too much fun. And I appreciate you checking in. Thanks, Nora. Rebecca writes in, Alameda is next to Oakland, therefore near San Francisco. Thank you, Rebecca. I just did not pull up a Google map or anything. Here's another one. Oakland is across the bay from San Francisco, and Alameda is an island, which is a short bridge or tube ride from Oakland. Thanks, Cliff. Okay, well, thanks. thanks to everybody on the Alameda thing, because I just, you know, had no idea. But I bet you all can't tell me where Roswell, Georgia is. Nyeh, 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 nyeh. Mitch is in Sycamore, Illinois. Hello, Mitch.
Hello. Say, I wanted to call in and mention the complete lack of coverage in the news about Fukushima, where the radiation is getting worse than it's been. 75 miles away, it's 60 times what the dose of a nuclear plant worker is allowed in 1 year.
You know, I have not seen anything noticeable in lately in the New York Times, which is the only newspaper I get, the only, you know, actual newspaper. I read everything I can online, but I've seen nothing. I heard in passing something the other day that the situation was worsening in Fukushima. Is that right?
Very bad. Six of the reactors are now involved. And what I find even worse is that when we discover any radiation here in the United States from it, the EPA has been ordered to take the radiation detectors offline. Last week when the nuclear reactors alarms were going off in Florida, much as they did right back with Chernobyl when they were going off in Norway, mm-hmm. that triggered the whole story coming out in the open.
Detectors, the nuclear workers were
warned, oh, don't shut down. That's just coming from Fukushima.
Detectors.
Now, to me, if we're getting radiation detector alarms going off in Tampa.
They were in Tampa. Oh, my God.
That basically we should be increasing our monitoring, not shutting it down.
Yeah, that would definitely make sense. Mitch, I'm going to check out. I'll get online here probably tonight or tomorrow and see what I can find and try to bring that up again. Thanks, Mitch. I appreciate the info. We'll be right back.
Listening to Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour. Thanks to Joe Bacon, who sponsored this hour. Thank you, Joe. We appreciate it very much. Back to your phone calls. Nick is in Manchester, New Hampshire. Hello, Nick.
Oh, hey, Mike. That's quick.
Well, we try to be as quick as possible.
I don't know. I appreciate it, man.
Sure.
Can you still hear me all right?
I hear you just fine.
All right, cool. I got kind of spotty signal. Listen, I was calling in because, long and short of it, I work as a labor organizer, actually.
Uh-huh.
And, I'm working to, like, you know, build the union and try and hopefully, like, take back some of America's future from these banker bastards who are raping us left and right.
Uh-huh.
So I'm driving around, and I got a rental car in the city I'm working in. I'm listening to your show, and Here's the thing, like, I've heard you speak a lot about, you know, the lack of outrage and the lack of action on the part of the American people.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, to one extent or another, you know, that's kind of understandable because for the last, like, 30 years, you know, we've been kind of floating on top of this bullshit artificial bubble of prosperity.
No, wait, you can't. Nick, I'm sorry. For some reason, we can't use the BS word live like that. And Kathy had to dump your call, but I hope you'll call back in. It's not that I have a problem with the BS word. It's just that our affiliates have to be careful, I guess. They risk everything by putting this program on the air to begin with. But I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I hope you'll call in again. It's just that, you know, a lot of people, I've said this before, I'll say it again, a lot of people who listen on Sirius XM think that, I guess, just feel that that's the only place this program is carried, which is not the case. If it were the case, you could say anything you wanted. So, no offense, didn't mean to hang up, but we have triggers that go off if certain words are used. And isn't that stupid? It really is. It's a stupid policy, but it's not the policy of our affiliates. It is the policy, I think, nobody knows anymore, of the FCC. And the last thing I want to do is put anyone at risk of getting a fine, because that means that they will drop our program. It's very simple. You know, just that's how it works. And I don't know that that would happen, but I just don't want to put myself or our stations at risk for it. So I appreciate your call, and I understand the passion. And the BS word is such a common word. I know. But that's where we are. Ed is in St. Cloud, Minnesota. Hello, Ed.
Hey, my man Mike. What's going on tonight?
You are.
Okay, good to hear. I like your callers. You know, I go through Minneapolis all the time. I had no idea the melting pot that existed in the northern side of Minneapolis, but I'll have to stop by there and get some ethnic food in one of these days.
There you go. Well, according to Nora, it's Ethiopia, Somalia.
Somalia and hippies, apparently. A lot of hippies.
There you
Amazing.
Go.
I consider myself a hippie, so maybe I'll feel at home there.
There you go.
Hey, just got done reading. I don't know if you talked about this. I listen to your program like I listen to it every night for a month, and I get good and depressed, and I got to turn it off for a while.
Yeah, I hear you. You ought to try doing this program every night. You talk about depression.
Yeah, that's funny. But I got done reading this really good article in Rolling Stone about Roger Ailes, and I mean.
Yeah, I've read about half of it online. I used to subscribe to Rolling Stone, a bunch of other magazines, but, you know, subscriptions run out, and you take a look in the checkbook and go, oh, damn. I read about half of that. That is one sick bastard, Roger Ailes. But he really is a mental case, you know?
You go from what, like, I mean, it's interesting that it goes as far back as Nixon.
Right.
And I know Karl Rove was involved at that time, too.
Right.
And you know, you talk about, like, him crafting, you know, telling Nixon, and Nixon kicked him to the curb. He goes off and does entertainment for a while, comes back, helps out, you know, George H.W. Bush.
Mm-hmm.
It helps out Reagan, you know, with all this crafting and everything, works for this TVN network. I mean, this guy, you know, I was talking to my girlfriend about it. She's like, well, what does he get out of this? I said, you know what? This guy has been around. He has basically been a behind-the-scenes puppet master for, like, 40 years. Like, it doesn't matter. You know, the next president comes along, and he's there. He doesn't have to get elected. He can just sit behind the scenes and reap the benefits of just sitting back there and stirring up, you know, stuff.
Well, you know, Roger, I'm reading a book right now. I'm slogging through it. I put it down about 2 weeks ago and haven't picked it back up yet because it takes a lot of work to read this book. But it's the title is Political Ponerology, P-O-N-E-R-O-L-O-G-Y. I'd never heard that word until I was introduced to this book, Political Ponerology. Essentially, what the book says is that throughout the history of the human race, the psychopaths, the real psychopaths, are the ones that have determined policy and direction of ultimately, occasionally, the entire human race. And which is easy to understand when you pick the obvious people that would refer to, like Hitler, like Mao, like George W. Bush. And Roger Ailes fits so perfectly into that category of a complete sociopath. The article in Rolling Stone was so revealing about what this guy is about and what motivates him and why he does what he does. So I've read about half of it. God knows I'm gonna finish it first chance I get. Ed, we're flat out of time. I hope you call back, man. We have to leave it there. Thanks, Ed. So, I'm the king of doom. The king of doom in the Malloy chat room on Ustream. Cass in California, the king of doom. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.